Welcome. It's time for a Berlin briefing special. It's already day three of the widening conflict in the Middle East after Israel and the United States attacked Iran in what they described as a preemptive strike. Now, Cyprus has been hit. A British RAF base there was targeted by suspected drones. And that means that a European Union country has now become part of this widening conflict, which is also seeing explosions in Bahrain, Dubai. And smoke has also been seen in the embassy, near the embassy of the United States in Kuwait. So let's first listen to what Donald Trump, the U.S. president, said would now unfold.
Over the past 36 hours, the United States and its partners have launched Operation Epic Fury, one of the largest, most complex, most overwhelming military offensives the world has ever seen. Nobody's seen anything like it.
With me to discuss what is happening at this moment in time and what that will mean for the immediate future is Niloufar Gulani, who from our Persian service at DW on the line there, and Richard Walker, our chief international editor. And Richard, I want to start with you because this is spreading and unfolding fast. Now there's also exchange of fire between Hezbollah in Lebanon and Israel. What are we seeing unfold right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the phase that we're in. We're seeing a spreading of this conflict, which is something that has obviously been a risk from early on. We saw over the weekend Iran hitting back at its neighbours in the Gulf and targeting evidently not just military installations, but also hitting civilian targets in places like Dubai, you just mentioned earlier. And what we saw now in the last 12 hours or so is Hezbollah firing rockets into northern Israel, Israel hitting back strongly there. So we have a sense of a phase during which this conflict is potentially spreading. And of course, yeah, this could take it to even more dangerous places.
And just before we started recording this, we also saw a post from the security chief of Iran, Ali Larijani, saying that essentially that the Iranians will not give in. They will defend themselves against the United States so that this regime would essentially continue. And that's where I want to bring you in, Niloufar. What is happening on the ground? What are you hearing from inside Iran? Can this be the kind of turning point that Donald Trump has called on the Iranian people to seize, essentially to seize the moment to end this regime?
Yeah, I mean, at this very moment, it is really, really early to say such a thing, but we don't know how far these attacks are going to continue and what could happen next. But the thing is that at the moment, for example, there are so many different strikes across the country, especially in Tehran. And the thing is that here we need to separate ordinary Iranians from the regime, because at the end of the day, they are the people who are paying the price for that. And if it's going to continue like this, because now we are hearing President Trump talking about 4 or 5 weeks of operation, that was the original plan, but now maybe it could be shorter. But even like 1 week of attacks on Iran could be really, really hard for the Iranian people. We already know that Iran suffered from a dire economic situation and also weakened infrastructures. And if it's going to continue like this, for example, I've been watching a video that Iranian security forces, Iran attacked Aramco, for example. If it's going to be like this, then I would imagine that, like, for example, countries in the Middle East forming a kind of coalition maybe. And in that case, we might see Iran's infrastructures, especially Iran's energy infrastructures, attacked. And it would be a really worst case scenario for the people of Iran.
Yeah, Saudi Aramco, of course, one of the largest exporters of oil in the world. What are you hearing, basically? You are looking through social media. You have contacts inside the country. Is there any kind of momentum gathering, or are we still at a moment of utter chaos?
Yeah, I think it's the beginning, and it's the chaos at the moment. What I've been hearing from people on the ground is that they have a great fear, although they are happy that Khamenei is dead at the moment because they call him the great dictator of Tehran, who was directly responsible for suppressing Iranian people. They are happy for that, but at the same time, they are super worried about what is going to happen next, and of course, they are panicking, especially in Tehran. I've been contacting with some people. They were experiencing such a horrifying moments, and this is a 2 day of full strike on different places in Tehran. And somebody was describing that she was really in panic because she also has pets. She can't leave his home, and it was this all over the place was just shaking when these strikes happening. And she only mentioned that she, for example, I only have everything with me for 2 months, everything that I need for like food and water and stuff like that. What if it's going to be like more than this, and what I can do about it? And we also see that, for example, now hospitals are being attacked, schools are being attacked. This is a war. It's a full-scale war, and there is this thing that the control is in the hand of Israel and US, and nobody has control, and everything could happen. I mean, it could be very, very bad for the Iranian people, but we have to wait and see.
Well, let's hear from Masoud Pezeshkian, who's basically assumed what he says is control at this moment, where dozens of the top leadership, of course, including the top leader of Iran, have been killed essentially in those airstrikes. So let's take a listen.
Today, the interim leadership council started its work, and with the help of God, we will continue the path of Imam Khomeini, the path of the dear leader, and the path of all justice seekers in the world with strength.
So the reference there to Khamenei, Richard, how much of a shock is this also into the region?
Well, of course, it's an enormous shock. I mean, this regime has been there in power in Iran for almost 50 years. I mean, even Khamenei himself has been in power since 1989. If you think about who else around the world was in power then, you had, you know, Gorbachev and the Reagan-Bush transition in the United States. You had Helmut Kohl here in Germany. I mean, you had a totally different world. So he's been a real consistent presence for almost four decades. And of course, a presence that has been extremely disruptive to neighboring countries in the region. So, but we're very much in uncharted territories here. I mean, of course, it sounds like a cliche, but we really are. I mean, as we've seen, that there's been, you know, that Iran is trying to present the impression of a structured transition taking place, that there'd been layers of sort of handovers of power to allow for exactly this kind of scenario where the supreme leader is killed and other top leaders are killed. But of course, this is going to be one of the tests going forward, is how strong is this transitional period within Iran? Can the regime maintain its existing power structures, or can it be so weakened that you start to see kind of competition breaking out between factions within it, which could potentially lead to its implosion?
And of course, this now also poses a huge question for the Europeans. Here in Germany, we heard the German Chancellor Friedrich Merz speak on this on Sunday. Yeah. And of course, the big overarching question is, does this violate international law?
Yeah.
Here we've now also seen a statement by the E3, that's Britain, France and Germany, basically saying that they are considering that they will take defensive measures as well. The Brits are already involved in shooting down rockets. But let's just take a listen to what Friedrich Merz had to say.
This leaves us with a dilemma. But we can say this much regarding international law. It is a conflict that has been going on for decades, which Israel and the U.S. now want to end through military strikes.
So this is a departure, basically, from defending international law. They're giving, literally, the German Chancellor is giving the United States and Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, a break from these standards, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like that. I mean, of course, the Europeans, I mean, particularly Germany, has really tried to be a consistent defender of international law over the decades. And particularly what, you know, the dominant conflict that's been taking place in Europe in the last, now getting into its fifth year, is, of course, Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And absolutely central to the European case against that has been that it has been a gross violation of international law. Now, looking at what the US and Israel are doing, I think it's pretty widely held that it is not lawful under international law. There was not an, this is not a defensive act. There was not an imminent threat to either country. But, and Merz essentially saying that, well, you know, that's a dilemma for the Germans and other Europeans looking at this and thinking, well, is there really a way under international law to resolve this? But I think this really opens the gates for you know, the likes of Russia, the likes of China, to criticize Europe for what they see as double standards. And we've seen in the UN Security Council, we've seen also just now further statements from the Chinese Foreign Ministry saying that these strikes violate international law. And this really, it potentially does threaten Europe's standing in the eyes of the world as a force that ostensibly always defends international law. That can there ever be exceptions to international law? Well, Friedrich Merz is almost suggesting here that there can.
Well, he says he doesn't want to lecture and he is heading to the United States.
Yeah.
So it will be very interesting to see what happens in the direct conversation there. I want to close with you, Niloufar, and just check in with you. What does this mean for the image of what was formerly known as the West in the region?
I think now I can imagine that it's a really hard situation for them as well, because now they are speaking of like involving in a much bigger escalation. It seems to me that it's going to be even much bigger, because now it's like a no way back point to me. And if it's going to be like this, I mean, everything really, really depends on the Iranian side. If they choose to like surrender, maybe, or maybe, I don't know, negotiate with Putin, for example, I don't know, maybe with Russia, maybe with other countries, maybe say that, yeah, okay, now we want to negotiate. If this they see, it is going to be really, really hard for them, because it was already a massive blow to the whole regime. But we have to wait and see if they are choosing the way of diplomacy, of the, or if they are going to continue like this. Because if other countries are joining these kind of coalition or this front against the Iranian regime, then it would be really, really hard for them to get out of this situation.
So a fast evolving situation, and we will keep you up to date here at DW News across all platforms on what is happening and what it means, what the impact will be. Niloufar, Richard, thank you very much for joining me here today. Now you're fully briefed up on the status right now in a fast evolving situation.